Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, have you ever heard of those like Cold War numbers stations that people would tune into?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay. Sometimes when I listen to Donald Trump kind of ramble, I think that maybe he is that. He's like
wow.
A Cold War. He's like dropping in bits of like intel into his speeches, because that's the only way it makes sense.
You know what? It does make sense, because when I hear his voice, I want to get under my desk and put my head between my knees, as I was taught to do at the end of the Cold War.
Infotainment-packed show today, Alyssa. We are going to talk about the Harris-Walz plan for family policy, which is
good.
Super good, super interesting. We're also going to talk about Donald Trump turning into a tampon commercial, essentially.
Still hates women, spoiler.
Hates women, but wants us to think he doesn't, and we're never going to have to worry about abortion again, and everybody gets a puppy, including J.D. Vance, who may have rented his, may not have rented his.
We're going to get into it someday.
We also have our back-to-school special, where we are going to look at education on the ballot at the state level. Mm-hmm. That's where the action happens. And it can get a little bit in the weedsy sometimes, but we've got to know what's going on with public money and how the right wing has planned to dismantle public education for a long time. And they're trying it again this year, as they do every year. Then we have got an interview with Rebecca Nagel, author and podcaster who hosted the Crooked Media series This Land. She has a new book out. And finally, some Sani Petty. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who are always keeping up to speed on the national fuckery forecast. Because, Alyssa, it's coming in.
Doesn't stop. It's tidal waves.
Warm fronts. Cold fronts. Storm fronts. I mean, literally. We've got some stuff to talk about today. We're going to talk a little bit about, like, Donald Trump's insane appeals to women.
It is, you don't want to give him the attention, but you do have to listen to it twice because you can't believe what he said the first time. Even how many years in are we at this point? Still have to.
So we're going to talk about that. But first, I think what's happening right now, and I realized as I was preparing for the show, I was like, oh my God, I'm falling for it too. Is that Donald Trump's whole thing is being the person that people are talking about the most. Mm-hmm. And having it overshadow good ideas and sane behavior by other people by just acting as crazy as possible all the time. And in 2016, it sort of worked. So I want to start today by talking a little bit about the Harris-Walz tickets proposals around family policy, which have been a subject of conversation, in addition to the obvious stuff about healthcare, which I would argue dovetails with family mm-hmm. policy.
Sure.
There's also the proposed $6,000 tax credit for the first year of a baby's life, mm-hmm. which doesn't currently exist, and a $5,000 tax credit there on out for kids. So I think that's pretty good. Yeah.
Come on. It's stupid that it doesn't exist. It's stupid that they let it expire in the first place.
Yeah. And just a reminder that J.D. Vance, who is like so obsessed with what other people are doing or not doing, having kids or not having kids— just didn't show up for that vote.
No, he was busy, Erin. He was busy being pro-life.
He was, no, him and his couch had an important date. No, he was testing out dogs to rent. He was like auditioning.
Poor dogs.
Dogs. Look, I don't not believe that it's his dog, but if it turned out not to be his dog, I would be like, that makes sense.
You wouldn't be shocked at all. And also, if we could hear the internal monologue of that poor dog. He'd be like, help, help.
There's an interview he did recently with Tucker Carlson, and the dog, like, comes into frame, and the dog is, like, not wearing a harness or a collar, which is odd.
What?
Yeah. And like, so JD is, like, trying to hold the dog back, like, by its hips. But like, it is
Stop.
Weird. It is, like, I've never once, like, you give the dog, I know maybe he doesn't want to get dog hair on his suit, but, like, if you have a dog, you kind of give him a
lint roller.
You give him a little, like a headlock, but like a nice headlock. Like a, come here, buddy. Like, I'm going to give you.
Like, who's a good boy?
Yeah, exactly. But he was like gingerly holding onto the dog's hips, and it was so odd. Anyway, let's go back to, I'm sorry. They keep acting so
Nothing
weird that I'm
comes
like.
Comes naturally except cruelty.
Yeah, nothing. Yeah, exactly. And that frown that somebody must have told him makes him look serious and masculine, but just makes him look constipated. So, okay, so back to the family policy, because this stuff is important, right?
Yes.
You know, we don't want to elect weird people. We want to elect people with a plan. Harris also proposed a 7% cap on childcare costs mm-hmm. related to income. She hasn't gone into, like, details about her specific plan, but I think it's reasonable to assume that this plan is kind of like what was proposed under the original Build Back Better right. that was tanked by Republicans and Joe Manchin. Who, by the way, fucking sucks. Like,
I mean,
fuck
it's tough out there.
Fuck that. I mean, fuck all the 50 Republicans or whatever, but also, like, fucking Joe Manchin. Anyway, the Build Back Better package in 2021 originally called for that 7% cap on childcare costs for people with children younger than six and for people with incomes up to 250% of the state's median income. So that would have expanded childcare access to about 20 million children. And there was also a universal pre-K measure in the Build Back Better package. Gosh, what could have been? You know? What could have been? That would have cost an estimated $382 billion, and the funding would have lasted about 6 years. But I got to say, as somebody with two children under the age of six, that would have been huge.
It's a big deal.
It would have been nice.
Made things a little easier.
Would have made things easier, but you know what? We've got some business geniuses from Silicon Valley who don't know how to pet dogs, deciding like what parents need and don't need. Also, coincidentally, you can tune into tomorrow's What a Day episode, where I'm going to talk to the new host Jane Costin about recent campaigns and family policies. And to hear this important conversation, head to the What a Day feed tomorrow. And listen. Okay, let's talk about Trump now because he said some stuff.
Boy.
Just last week, we were discussing the woman-hating pillar of the Trump-Vance 2024 campaign and also, pause, the Republican Party in general. Alyssa,
yeah,
you heard
yeah,
what
this isn't just them.
This isn't just them.
No.
Bernie Moreno just this week, Senate candidate in Ohio.
Bonkers.
Completely batshit insane car salesman was caught at a public event being recorded saying he doesn't understand. He thinks it's a little crazy that women over 50 would care about abortion.
That's
for obvious reasons, because they can't, ostensibly because he's
it is unbelievable how far they will go to marginalize
okay.
women over 50. Women, all women generally. But man, they really fucking hate older ladies.
They are awful. Like,
they're
have
like,
babies.
You need to go watch the kids. First have a baby, raise the baby, then when it's your turn, take care of your aging parents while you simultaneously then take care of your grandchildren? It's tiring. It's very
yeah.
tiring. Do you think they have plans that extensive for themselves in their golden years?
I think that they just want to be taken care of by women their entire lives. And in a way, they're tipping their hand to the fact that the entire American economy falls apart without the invisible labor of women.
Yep.
The unpaid invisible labor of women of all ages. But Bernie Moreno, just him saying like, oh, obviously, like, women over 50 shouldn't care about abortion. Bitch, you can't get pregnant either. Bitch, no, when have
he
you?
He never could.
You've never fucking ovulated in your goddamn life.
No.
If you really think, honestly, you know what, Bernie? Good idea. Good idea. I do actually think that it's normal for people to have empathy for other human beings who are not themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And for their, you know, their mothers, their daughters, their kid, whatever. It's normal to have empathy for people that aren't exactly living your exact life. But
it's actually
Bernie,
the whole point of empathy.
Yeah. But also, Bernie, you know what? Let's actually do that. Only people who can get pregnant can vote on whether or not to have abortions.
That would be
and how
great.
About, whoa, that's great. We solved it, man. We solved it. Let's do it. Let's let women under 40 be the only ones allowed. I mean, whatever. I'm over 40 and I figured out a way to get pregnant. But like, let's let people who can get pregnant. That's great. That's a good idea.
Because you know
I
what
think
his response to that would be?
What?
That if you actually want that, he would, so I could never have kids, right? He would, mm-hmm. he would want people like me to take a test. See if I actually could. Because Aaron, if I'm 30 and I can't birth a baby, I don't know if I'd make the cut for him. Probably not.
So we should Yeah, I guess that is bureaucratically probably a non-starter. But I'm just saying, as a thought experiment, if there was a way to just like honor system, like Scouts honor, like only vote if you only vote on abortion if you are somebody who might. Who might need one.
See, and I don't think that that you or I specifically hyperbolically extrapolated what he was intending to say either. You know what I mean? He's actually Aunt Lydia all by himself.
Like I say, play the tape forward, Bernie.
Right.
So you think that women over 50, because they cannot, although they have gotten pregnant.
Yeah.
Because they don't normally get pregnant. It's not something that is a day-to-day concern for them. That they shouldn't have an opinion, but it's okay for men of all ages to have an opinion.
On anything.
What the fuck? Like, that's weird. It's a weird thing to say.
It's really weird.
It is deeply, deeply creepy. But Donald Trump loves him. That's the Bernie that he likes.
Likes a lot of people. They're pretty bad.
Yeah. Mark Robinson being like, that's not me.
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Oh my God, Mark Robinson being caught making aggressively awful comments in a porn forum?
So weird. Imagine just leaving notes. He's just like leaving comments.
Have you ever, oh God.
It's like the New York Times cooking page.
If you've ever viewed online pornography, there is a comment section underneath. Who, I've always, like, who leaves comments?
Who leaves
does.
Comments? He it's left a lot of comments.
He left a lot of comments, and they said crazy things. And and then when he was presented with the evidence that was probably him, it was, you know that scene in Austin Powers when he's been on Frozen and he's in front of Elizabeth Hurley and his penis pump is being returned to him and he's embarrassed that it's being returned to him and they're presenting them with, like, a notarized letter saying that this is your penis pump. Like, blah, blah, blah. Like, that was literally the evidence they have that Mark Robinson was leaving those weird-ass comments on a porn forum.
IP addresses don't lie, dude.
And he's like, no, that's got to be somebody else.
It's like mainstream media.
Got to be somebody else. Yeah, sure, dude. CNN for years knew you would be the nominee for governor in North Carolina in this crucial year when North Carolina is a swing state. And they planned for it. Bitch, if Democrats were that good at scheming, Roe v. Wade would still be the law of the land.
A lot of
we
things
are
would be
not
different.
Good at scheming.
A lot of things would be different.
We ain't schemers. We should. I wish we did more scheming.
No,
I wish
we're
there
not
was more.
Schemer. We're just nice people who want to help people most of the
we
time.
Need, I think we could use just a touch more scheming on our side and a lot less scheming on their side. But anyway, that was a giant tangent. We're talking about Trump and women. On Friday, Trump posted an incoherent rant on Truth Social about abortion. We have a new associate producer on the show. And when I told her about the rant, she was like, okay. And she went and looked for it, pulled it, and was like, this is insane. Like, she hadn't seen it before. I'm going to read the rant. It's in all caps, obviously.
Obviously.
Women are poorer than they were 4 years ago, are less healthy than they were 4 years ago, are less safe on the streets than they were 4 years ago, are more depressed and unhappy than they were 4 years ago, and are less optimistic and confident in the future than they were 4 years ago. I will fix all of that, and fast. And at long last, this national nightmare will be over.
Thank God.
Women will be happy, healthy, confident, and free. Thank you, Mr. Tampax. You will no longer be thinking about abortion because it is now where it always had to be, with the states and a vote of the people. Okay, pause. That's exactly where it shouldn't be. Like, why is there a board of governors in between a woman and her uterus? That's fucking weird. It shouldn't be like that. That is not where it's supposed to be. It's the only medical, like, procedure where there's a fucking committee, an elected committee of mostly dudes who's like, honestly, they're probably like jizzing puffs of dust at their age. Like, okay, anyway. And with powerful exceptions like those that Ronald Reagan insisted on for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. But not allowing for Democrat demanded late-term abortion in the 7th, 8th, or 9th month or even execution of a baby after birth. Pause. He's talking about hospice care for terminally ill infants. He's talking about not wasting hospital resources, prolonging the life of a baby that is going to die a long, drawn-out death with medical intervention. It's ridiculous. Okay. Oh, execution of a baby after birth. That's called murder. Already illegal. We've gone over this. I will protect women at a level never seen before. They will finally be healthy, hopeful, safe, and secure. Their lives will be happy, beautiful, and great. Alyssa, what's Trump's game here?
It's like he's trying to clean up everything J.D. Vance has been saying, but not even cleaning it up at all, right? He's like, listen, girls. I know J.D. Vance said that he hates you single ladies. He hates you cat ladies. Actually, he wants all of you to be forced to have kids. Put that on a shelf for a minute, and I'm just going to tell you how unhappy you are, which is also what J.D. Vance said. You're all so unhappy, and my administration is going to be like Xanax for you, but you will still be prisoners of your gender because I am going to legislate everything you can and cannot do. Like, his game is, like, kind of, like, tap dancing around the fact that a lot of Republican women are like, this fucking abortion shit's gone too far. You guys are batshit. We don't agree with you. And like the loony Susan B. Anthony crowd that's like, you're not extreme enough. And so he's just addressing it with all caps in a nonsensical way that you literally need to like diagram the sentence to understand what he's saying. Other than you're all so miserable and I'm going to make you so happy. What?
Has he considered the fact that a lot of women are miserable because they are married to and had children with men who expect them to contribute 50% of the income to the home and 100% of the work of childcare?
There's that.
Is he considering that maybe women are unhappy because they are expected to provide free labor without complaining about it, that men are never asked to provide?
They're not. He doesn't understand that we've thought all along that Trump and the MAGA crowd didn't think we were people, and now he's, like, saying it, and we're like, okay, so we were right all along. Like,
I have a hypothetical question for anybody who would consider, any woman who would consider voting for Donald Trump. This line, I will protect women at a level never seen before. Do you have a kid? Do you have a daughter, niece, granddaughter, whatever, a young female relative? Would you let Donald Trump babysit her?
Never.
Would you let Donald Trump babysit your niece?
No. They wouldn't.
Absolutely not.
There's not a chance.
Not a chance.
Would Ivanka let her dad babysit her children?
That's a good question.
I'm guessing no. Because let me tell you something. I think it was I don't know if it was Eric's kids or Don Jr.'s kids. One of them was at the rally with one consortium of them was at the rally with Trump this weekend, and he did not know what to do with them.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, Donald Trump Jr. is kind of doubling it and carrying it forward with whatever trauma he received from his awful dad. Did you see the clip of him telling his, like, 17-year-old daughter that she was sexy?
Yeah, seen it a couple times.
So weird. Such fucking weirdos.
Especially when everyone else on The View was like, yikes.
Yeah, I would not let anybody in that family babysit. So what is Trump going off like this? Tell us about the state of his campaign.
Chaos. Total spiral. He has no idea what to say, so he's trying to say everything in one sentence so that he covers all his bases. But none of it is there's no policy behind what he said in the tweet. Mm-hmm. There's no substance. There's no, here is truly why you have been unhappy, and here are the things I'm going to do to make it easier. Because if he actually did do that cause and effect, he would be just regurgitating the policies of Harris-Walz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Donald Trump does love plagiarism.
There were entire
parts of one of his fake college's curriculums that turned out to be plagiarized from business school textbooks. And Melania's speech was partially plagiarized from a Michelle Obama speech
that she gave in
2016. It was really funny. And then they blamed Meredith McIver. I know way too much about Donald Trump thanks to our upcoming This Fucking Guy series on him. This is what it tells me, Alyssa. I think we can tell what numbers Donald Trump's internal campaign polling are getting by who Donald Trump barks about.
Yeah.
And I think that like maybe a month ago, he was saying like, oh, yeah, we don't really care about black men anymore. And he was implying they don't really care about black and Hispanic men anymore because white men are through the roof and
through
like
roof.
I think what he meant was that there's a lot of, like, white men are highly motivated and connecting with his message. But I think that Trump probably got some numbers that are like, hey, dude, they're not through the roof enough to, like, cancel every woman's vote.
No, especially when Joe Rogan starts talking about how Kamala's doing a good job.
Yeah. Oof.
Yikes.
It's got to be a rough one for him. But Donald Trump can't win with only angry white men. Like, they are loud. Mm-hmm. They never shut the fuck up. So sometimes it seems like there are more of them than there are. They are loud, but there's not as many of them as he needs to win. So right. He needs to convince some women using this, like, I don't know, a Summer's Eve-ass copy.
That is so funny. I was like, this sounds like a Massengill.
Well, I mean, Donald Trump is a douche, much like Summer's Eve. He thinks that he's going to be able to convince people with completely unspecific, ridiculous language. And also, I just want to say, like, he's trying to capture as many women as possible with a wide net. He's trying hope. Like, you're going to be happy and confident. And then he's trying fear. They're killing the babies after they're born. And then he's trying, like, nostalgic. Oh, Ronald Reagan wanted it like this. And he's trying, he's trying like a daddy thing for, like, young people. Like, I'll protect you, young women. It is all over the place messaging wise. And that to me is like, he got a bunch of numbers back that he is losing with women that he can rely on, older women. He's probably losing with, I saw some numbers that were a little bit shaky about white women. Mm-hmm. For him. He's definitely losing with younger women, and younger women are highly motivated to vote. So he is trying to just throw spaghetti at the Barbie aisle and see what sticks. And, I don't know.
And he'll be back with more tweets next week that are the opposite of what he just tweeted the other day.
When it's about women, it's called a twat. All right. Sorry. Do you think that Donald Trump is going to play the I don't know him with Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, even though he's been on stage with him before?
Totally. I mean, he's not going to have him on stage. He'll never have him on stage again. I'm sure there's been some phone call that's like, Mark, listen, my dude, I am with you, super with you. However, in order for us to win, you really got to stay the fuck away from me, but they're still going to give him money. They're still going to do GOTV for him. Like, they're just not going to stand up on a stage with him.
Yeah. I do want to close this segment on Trump's weird comments by quoting Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who called Donald Trump just deranged after he said in a rally last weekend that women would no longer be thinking about abortion if he's elected as president. Deranged. It's a good way to put it. Good job, Big Gretch.
Thanks, girl.
So, yep. Thanks, girl. All right, Alyssa, we've got to talk about something else that when I first read it, I was like, this can't be real.
It's real. It's real. So over the weekend, Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson announced a temporary agreement, because guess what? Government's about to go lights out again. It's called a continuing resolution, or a CR, or kicking the can, that will extend all government funding through December 20th. Nothing like going over the cliff at Christmas, and avoid having a government shutdown during election season. But the budget is missing a key component that both Johnson and Trump previously insisted upon, the SAVE Act, the grossest of the gross that would require proof of citizenship to vote in federal elections. Aaron, much like abortion after birth, it's already illegal. Extremely rare.
There's laws.
For non-citizens to vote in the U.S. elections, the SAVE Act would also, not so coincidentally, disenfranchise millions of eligible voters who do not have access to proof of citizenship, including, wait for it, 90% of married women whose last name on their birth certificate does not match the last name on their driver's license. Huh. What do you think?
Okay, look.
What do you think? Is this protecting women at a level never seen before?
Protecting us from the... how annoying it is to, like, find a parking spot outside of your local voting center. Mm-hmm. Protecting us from, like, democracy, which is such a bummer. I just kind of would prefer to not have any decisions to make. I just want to sit there and have some men make them for me. I think that'd be great.
So you know what I did when I was poking around on the old SAVE Act. I was like, if I needed my birth certificate, do I know where it is? I think so, but I'm not sure. Had to text my dad, see if it's still in his Rolodex, his little Filofax thing.
Is it a fireproof box?
You know it is.
We don't have fireproof boxes this generation.
No, I feel like, nope. That's why, Erin, this is exactly why through college, through many moves to many cities and many campaigns, I was like, Pop, why don't you hang on to my birth certificate?
You've got the fireproof box.
You got the fireproof box, Pop. And I was like, what if I needed it? And so I tried in New York State to get a duplicate birth certificate. It's $45. And let me tell you something. It's real fucking creepy because you go to the NewYorkState.gov website, but then it takes you to a not.gov website where you're supposed to put in your information. And then I started getting all these scammy emails asking for my social security number. So I'm just saying, this is fraught on so many levels that, of course, they have never thought through. But at least it's not happening for now.
I just got to say, look, I didn't change my last name when I got married because for professional reasons and also for laziness and also like a distant third feminism reasons.
Yeah.
Like number one, my job. Number two, lazy. Anyway, I didn't change my last name, which means that all matches and I wouldn't have a hard time voting. But like, listen, guys. The people who would have the most difficulty obtaining their original birth certificates are probably the people that are the oldest, older married women. So, like, you're really, like, I mean, all women should be allowed to vote, whatever. But, like, you're punching yourselves in the balls a little bit here, guys.
Yep.
Because women who have the same last names as the names on their birth certificates are unmarried or they're the type of woman who did not change her last name when she got married. And how do you think we vote?
How do you think we feel about you?
How do you think we vote, guys? And I would be like extra salty if somebody, if like, I don't know, my mom wasn't able to vote because she, you know, can't get access to like her birth certificate or whatever. Like, I would be extra salty. I would vote extra hard against Republic. I mean, I vote as
punch
hard as
that
I can.
Punch that hole real hard into the back.
Yeah, I would vote so hard against them. But they would really, it doesn't seem like it was very thought through.
Most of their stuff isn't. It's all this messaging bullshit because guess what? It was never going to be included. But Trump doubles down and then he gets the loyalty test, right? MTG, again, on the picket line. She's like front and center with all reporters saying how Mike Johnson better figure it out. And this is what Trump wants. And it's so good for America. Never saying how it's so good for America. But most of their plans don't like come to a conclusion. They're just like, this is what we're going to do. We don't know how yet, but we just want you to know that we'll figure it out once we're in office.
It's trust me, bro.
Exactly.
As a campaign and policy strategy. Trust me, bro. I don't know. You've been pretty bad at all this in the past. Yeah, you know, it is good that the SAVE Act was eventually dropped from the continuing resolution. I am a little bit bummed that the continuing resolution is going to keep it open, the government open until December 20th, because it would have been really funny to see the U.S. Capitol turned into a spirit Halloween during the government shutdown.
Yes. And I actually thought this all the way through. I was like, I don't know, it kind of, if Biden were running, I think it would hurt him more than it would hurt Kamala. You know what I mean? Like, because he's president, he's top of the ticket, and also in charge of negotiating for all intents and purposes. I always kind of get a little excited to see things go over a cliff, which is deranged.
You've got beltway poisoning.
I do. But, Erin, you forget that you are podcasting with the person who wrote the scripts for the White House operators when we did shut the government down. So I get a little adrenaline rush when I hear this about to happen. But the truth is, everybody thinks that it's going to hurt one party more than the other. And it always hurts everybody because it just shows that Washington is so broken. So it is very good that it did not happen for a million reasons.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, I think we've seen this whole, to bring it back to the SAVE Act, we've seen this whole rhetoric around not allowing women to vote or like repealing the 19th Amendment from like people, self-styled right-wing provocateurs who have like two jokes, and that's one of them. and half of those right-wing provocateurs were just recently unmasked as being Russian sock puppets. So, you know, how seriously can we take them? But it is not untrue that Republicans would do a lot better if fewer women voted.
Absolutely.
And so I would not put it past them to have this be the sort of first, like, flailing stab at it. But they never stop is the thing. Like, the first one might
go— coming back.
Exactly. Like, I think about the personhood thing. The
100%.
In 2010 in Mississippi, there was a public referendum that would have granted personhood to fertilized embryos. Mm-hmm. And it failed spectacularly in the most red of red states in 2010. It got like laughed out of the election. People were like, this is ridiculous. What a ridiculous thing to propose. And then, you know, 13, 14 years later, the Supreme Court of the state of Alabama essentially declares embryos to be people. And IVF clinics in the state of Alabama still haven't, even though they passed
still
a
limbo.
Sort of a half-assed, like, oh no, IVF people can't be prosecuted for destroying embryos. It doesn't really give clinics the peace of mind to continue operation. Regardless, personhood is a thing now. It is a thing that is in the national conversation. And it took 14 years to get there, mm-hmm. but it's there. So, like, preventing women from voting by making people produce their original birth certificate and have the birth certificate name match the name on your driver's license, it sounds a little like, you know, messy now, but like you got to keep an eye on these fuckers.
Yeah.
They never give up.
Because also, they don't actually listen to their voters, right? Mm-mm. Every time there's like an overwhelming majority on something, they're like, listen, we think you guys misunderstood. We're going to tear this apart line by line. And we're going to destroy your brains to the point that you finally cry uncle and you're like, okay, fucking fine. Maybe you know better than me. But for the most part, their voters are rejecting these crazy ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Let's talk about school choice. School choice is a misnomer, and I can't believe we're letting them get away with
it. We're not. That's why we're talking it.
Right. I wish that, you know how like people stopped calling pro-life people pro-life and started calling them anti-choice and anti-abortion, mm-hmm. which is what it should be because it's more descriptive. School choice, we should say people who are anti-public schools. Anti-public schools, dismantling public education has long been a priority for Republicans mm-hmm. in this country, but they've called it school choice, and so that's what we're going to call it for simplicity's sake. It's code for using public money and alternative options to your local public schools, usually in the form of vouchers, education savings accounts, or tax credits to use toward private schools or homeschooling. A mm-hmm. homecoming, that'd be great. Homecoming would be off the chain if the government was paying for it. However, as we have seen in states like Arizona, Ohio, and Texas, these programs don't fucking work. They're terrible and they don't work. They're complete bullshit. Okay, Alyssa, where is it on the ballot this year?
Aaron, it is on the ballot in three states. In Kentucky, voters are deciding whether to allow state funds, clarify, your tax dollars, to be used for non-public education, such as charter schools. In Colorado, the vote is about the right to school choice at all, which could be a stepping stone to starting a school voucher program. Nebraska, on the other hand, has a citizen-led initiative on the ballot, a veto referendum that would repeal Legislative Bill 1402, which authorizes the state treasurer to administer $10 million in scholarship funding for private and religious schools beginning in fiscal year 24-25. So let's talk about why quote-unquote school choice programs can be the Trojan horse of education equity.
Okay. Yeah, it is a Trojan horse, and it absolutely sucks. And I'm, you know, I am biased here, and I think, Alyssa, you're biased. Let's show our biases.
I am absolutely
100%
biased.
My sister's a teacher. My uncle is a teacher. My aunt is a teacher. My mom was a teacher and then a high school administrator. Like, teachers all the way down in my family.
And Aaron, we must always be suspicious and deeply suspect of any program, the voucher program, that was born out of people opposed to desegregating schools in the 1950s and 60s.
Yes. Okay? Racism.
Origin story.
Racism also brought us the Electoral College.
Yeah.
And several other institutions in the U.S. that are now we're like, this sucks. Why can't we get rid of it? It's racist.
It's totally people, racist.
Yes. People didn't want to send their kids to school with people with black kids mm-hmm. in places like Boston.
A lot of places.
And so instead they wanted to send their kids to religious schools, but the problem was that they couldn't afford it. And so the state was like, well, here, you can. You can
come on, Catholic school kids. We got you.
Yeah. The thing that really gets me about school vouchers is that there has been so much scholarship done on whether or not this actually improves student outcomes.
And it doesn't.
It does not.
Nope.
You're not helping your kids.
Like over, like it's, it is like so clear in the data. This isn't like you and I seeing what we want to see. It is an, it is researched to shit and it does not help kids.
It does not help kids. It essentially is a, I guess a way to redistribute tax dollars to yes. religious institutions and private for-profit enterprises that are in the charter school game. And it's really gross.
And also, Erin, it mostly benefits. This is the thing. All the Republicans put this program out and they're like, you guys, we're being benevolent. We're trying to help low-income kids. And it's bullshit because most of the kids helped are already, they are wealthy and they are already in private school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in some places, what happened was that the schools just increased their tuition the amount that the vouchers were. So yep. it didn't really save anybody money, but it did make this, it just was a direct pipe from yeah. the tax coffers to the school's bottom line. They just increased the cost that amount of money.
And they put up these bullshit things again where they're helping inner city kids or they're helping rural kids. Well, guess what? Most private schools, Erin, even if the kids could afford the tuition through the voucher program, they can't get to the schools because most schools don't provide transportation. So again, it's one of these things like we were just talking about where at first blush, quote unquote, school choice, well, that sounds like a great idea, you know? And then you get into it and you're like, oh, we're giving money to religious schools. Also worth noting, most of these charter schools, well, charter schools, private schools, religious schools, they do not have the scrutiny that public schools do. So mm-hmm. teachers do not need the same level of education, standardized tests, or pay.
They get really hosed in private schools.
There is a total lack of accountability in so much of this. And it's really bad.
Yeah, and, you know, not only does it not benefit students and does it primarily benefit families and the actually mm-hmm. and the wealthy families and the institutions that behind the schools, mm-hmm. It bankrupts states. Like yes. in Arizona has a voucher system that it's considered a model for many states, but it's only been going on for 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's a universal voucher program that's been going on for 2 years. The state has gone hundreds of millions of dollars over budget, and they've had to make cuts in other areas.
Like water. Huh. Erin, they're not cutting money from things. One, when most states go over budget and create huge deficits with voucher programs— where do they take the money? They take it from public schools, further eroding the education provided at public schools. And Arizona was just like, it's like so incredible. A state that is so reliant on water and they cut millions of dollars from programs that were going to help sort getting more water to people in Arizona.
Hmm.
What do you need? What are our bodies made mostly of? Like water? So
money.
Weird.
Money.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot money.
Thirsty people work harder. No, they don't. There's also a ProPublica investigation into the voucher program in Ohio. This is some shit. Education vouchers in Ohio often subsidize families who are already paying for private school, and some schools require their families to apply for yep. vouchers. So they just exploit the system. And it sort yeah. of feels like that's by design, like lawmakers have plausible deniability to be like, oh, that's never how it was intended. But really, actually, it kind of was.
Kind of was.
Because the people that are pushing for these are people that will benefit from them monetarily. And those are schools and religious organizations. The veto referendum in Nebraska will reverse the state's plan, which is cool.
Good.
Like
that's
the
good.
Voters were like,
and I
hey,
feel like Nebraska's kind of on it these days, so I'm hopeful.
I'm hopeful too. I just want to know, Alyssa, like with all the data that we have, and I don't expect you to have a definitive answer
uh-oh.
Here, but
okay.
we have data that shows it's not good. It doesn't benefit students. Mm-hmm. It exploits the workers within the private school system. It doesn't benefit states. It can bankrupt states and is often taken advantage of by religious organizations and organizations and entities behind charter schools.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how are states still getting away with these programs? Like, why are people still like, okay, that sounds, you know, it didn't work for anybody else, but it might work for us. Like, how are people getting away with it?
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, I guess on the one hand, they have Republican governors or state legislatures or people like Donald Trump running for president who tout these programs, which I guess gives them like air cover if they say they want to keep doing it. I don't know if they're trying to just run public education out of their states, basically. It's totally nonsensical why, I mean, it's right, it's the definition of insanity. They keep doing the same thing over and over in states and running into huge deficits, having to take money from other vitally important programs. I think in Arizona, they also took money away from the highway improvement program around Phoenix, which is like desperately needed. It doesn't make sense except racism.
It doesn't make sense except racism, but also, like, there is something so, like, bloodlessly capitalist and crass about this.
Yeah, and their donors are benefiting.
Right. Public schools have been something that profit-hungry, soulless capitalists have wanted to be able to extract profit from forever. Forever. Like, it's already, like, education is already a way for, you know, to extract money from people.
Right.
But they want to make it so that in order for your kid to get an education, you need to pay even more. You need to pay even more. Childcare is even more expensive. There are places in Missouri that I think only have school 4 days a week now.
Yeah, I read that too.
Yeah, and it also, to me, feeds into this larger dark trend of trying to make it basically impossible to have two parents that work and have children.
Absolutely, because when you take away the fifth school day in Missouri, who's taking care of the kids on the fifth day?
Probably mom.
Mom.
To be honest.
Right.
And it feels like a part of a very insidious move to make it so that somebody's got to stay home. Right. And it's probably not going to be dad. And it's overall incredibly insidious, but I think the worst part of it is the sexism at the root of
Absolutely.
All of this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it is really disrespectful and sexist toward a teaching profession. And I say it's sexist toward the teaching profession because 75% of teachers are women. Mm-hmm. And I think that disrespect for the teaching profession is sexist at its root. And it's disrespectful toward caregiving parents and who are mostly also women. At the root of this is like racism, the ability for people to send their kids to schools that are not integrated and have the government pay for it. And sexism, like a non-respect for the work of teaching and the work of caregiving. But I'm on a soapbox now. For more information on the no good, very bad school voucher issues, we should direct you to Vote Save America. We always talk about it. They've got information to help you. If you live in one of those states, you want to be one of the people that keeps school vouchers out.
Save public school education.
All right. And we would be remiss, Alyssa, to close out a back-to-school special without talking about some fuckery going on in North Carolina.
What
the fuck? More fuckery. Not just Mark Robinson. It's like—
No, don't let him distract you from all the other nonsense going on there right now. So, Aaron, in addition to education issues like school choice, there are also important state and local education seats up for election. North Carolina Superintendent of Public Education race is happening between Michelle Morrow, a far-right extremist who participated in the January 6th insurrection.
Okay.
And is adamantly anti-public school, homeschooled her kids. Okay?
Oh, God.
And Democrat Mo Green, the former superintendent of North Carolina's third largest school district. So first, let me pause here. Person who hates public schools, homeschooled her kids. Person who's the superintendent of the third largest school district. In terms of qualifications, just flagging that as a baseline, right? An example of how batshit she is, Aaron, we didn't have to go back in time. She just did this like last week. She tweeted that LGBTQ plus, that the plus stood for pedophilia. Okay.
What?
Okay. Stood for pedophilia. She also... Yep, that's who wants to run the school's errands. She also tweeted that Barack Obama and Joe Biden should be publicly executed. That was not that long ago either.
Why didn't she get a visit from the FBI? That's
not
seems...
sure. Did they think she was joking? Because I'm guessing she wasn't.
Yeah, and, that's not, you can't joke. Yeah, that's not, you can't
and
joke
Erin,
about that.
She wasn't just at January 6th. This person live streamed herself at the Save America rally that took place before the insurrection to be like, I'm here. Here I am. Now, I am a little bit joking with you, but this is actually very scary and hope all of our listeners are paying attention because right now they're Green and Moro are like within the margin of error. They're neck and neck.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Think about
Mo
it
Green,
this way.
North Carolina. Elect Mo Green.
Would you elect an arsonist to be the fire chief? Then you should not vote for this fucking woman.
It's insane. I watched videos with, like, I had seen stuff, but I really went down the rabbit hole last night. She's a mean, vicious person. I want to be like, who would see any of these interactions and think that's who I want in charge of my kids' education?
She is a...
She will voucher the whole state faster than you could say boo. I mean, it is so clear to me. She is not there to make schools great again.
Yeah, I would say when I've seen the footage I've seen of her, I get this feeling in my body like, you know when you see like a bat during the day and you're mm-hmm. like, that's got rabies. It's got rabies. Got to stay away from
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
It's like, nope. I get
yep,
some.
Back
there's
away.
A visceral, yeah, uh-uh. Will bite. Very. Do not want. Get away. Brain disease. This is huge. And just so everyone has some numbers, North Carolina ranks 48th out of 50th
for not good.
Per pupil expenditure. And Moro wants to reject federal funding, which is like really, I don't know. You know, that old saying, boys go to Jupiter to get more stupider. I feel like all the southern states are in competition with each other to be the place where boys go to get more stupider. And if Moro wins, North Carolina will be the place to go get more stupider.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
I mean, I can't even imagine the things that she could possibly do. She doesn't believe in humanity. Like, how could she be in charge of schools? It is truly mind-bending.
Yeah. Okay, North Carolina voters, you've got to get out and you've got to keep this lady.
This is a red alert. She's a red alert.
She is a red alert. She is a bat during the day. And now we have some quick hits from states where governors have made moves to protect their schools. So this week in California, Governor Gavin Newsom signed the Phone Free Schools Act, which, hell yes.
Yes.
It requires all public and charter schools to reintroduce rules limiting or prohibiting smartphones. And in Massachusetts, Governor Maura Healey released updated guidance on how to address hate and bias motivated incidents in schools. Mm-hmm. Massachusetts also introduced $1.34 million in genocide education grants and $338,000 in hate crime prevention grants to local schools and educational agencies. Imagine that. Lawmakers who are actually trying to make their schools a better and safer place. I also want to shout out the California AG's office that has been really aggressively going after attempts by local school boards to mandate that trans kids be outed to their parents. So California, not to brag.
Not brag. Brag.
We're on top
I don't
of
feel
it.
Like I can brag that much about New York right now. So you just like go crazy in California.
I've just, there's, there are, it's not a perfect place, but
he's
I'm
trying.
Into We're trying. We're moving in the right direction. We're moving in a good direction. Oh, and Alyssa, this is
what?
One of your pet issues. Let's
what?
Close this. Let's close back to school out. Clear the lists. We talk about this every year.
We need, there are so many bad things going on, but there is something you can do to make yourself feel great. Here on Hysteria, we're so grateful for the inspiring teachers who support their students unconditionally and do everything they can to empower kids. Because of that, we wanted to plug Clear the List, an initiative dedicated to helping teachers get the school supplies on their Amazon wish list. Another plug, Jeff Bezos. We think so much of you. If you just went ahead and cleared all the lists, it would be what you spend on toilet paper in a year, I'm sure. I mean, just
Jeff, your ex-wife, Mackenzie Scott, is absolutely kicking your ass in winning the divorce.
Everywhere.
And winning hearts and minds. If Jeff Bezos just cleared all the lists, he would
Yes.
Slightly gain on her. Slightly gain on her.
I would think he was a much better person. It just seems like such a truly lovely thing to do. Schools and governments can only provide classrooms with so much, and many teachers end up spending money. So many teachers end up spending money out of their own pockets to supply their students. So please donate art supplies and books and things. We'll include the link in our show notes.
All right, we got to take a break. That was a lot of information, but it was necessary information. And when we come back, we've got an interview with somebody many of you might recognize, Rebecca Nagel.
Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends. Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who consider studying history the original doom scrolling. Our guest today is a writer and citizen of Cherokee Nation. You might recognize her voice from the podcast This Land, which she made with Crooked. She just released a book called By the Fire We Carry, The Generations Long Fight for Justice on Native Land. And we're going to talk about it with her today. Rebecca Nagel, welcome to Hysteria.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be back.
Well, we always miss you, and you are welcome anytime. How's the book tour going so far?
It's been amazing. You know, it's so nice to connect with people in person. You know, you work sort of by yourself in a little hole for years on something like a book. And it's really nice to connect with people who are excited about the work, who care about it, and have those conversations. So it's just been awesome.
Okay, so for those who don't know, what story are you telling in this book?
Yeah, so the book covers the story behind a Supreme Court case that resulted in the largest restoration of tribal land in U.S. history. But that case started in a surprising place, actually, as a murder in 1999. And the man who was found guilty and convicted was sentenced to death by the state of Oklahoma. And in a bid to save his life, his public defender came up with this novel legal theory that Oklahoma actually hadn't had jurisdiction to prosecute the case in the first place because the crime happened on the reservation of Muscogee Nation. Oklahoma said that reservation hadn't existed in over a century. And that might sound like a reservation no longer exists. 100 years is a long time, but that's not actually how the law works. And so that question of whether or not Muscogee Nation still had a reservation went all the way to the Supreme Court and was decided in 2020. And so the book follows the case from the original crime all the way up to the Supreme Court and kind of closely traces that 20-year history. And then it also talks about the history of our tribes being removed from the southeast to west of the Mississippi forcibly by the U.S. government, and then how Oklahoma was created on top of those treaty territories. And that history is really important because that's why, you know, the land rights today and also this legal victory matter.
Did this victory, I remember your episode when the victory came down, and I remember you freaking out because Neil Gorsuch wrote the opinion. Why were you excited that Neil Gorsuch wrote the opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's surprising to a lot of people on the left or a lot of, you know, Democrats that Neil Gorsuch has been great for tribes, but he has a strong jurisprudence of when it comes to the legal rights that tribes have, the courts are constitutionally bound to follow those rights. And that sounds like it would not be a radical position for a judge or a Supreme Court justice. But what so often happens in the federal judiciary is that when a tribe has a clear legal right to, you know, land, jurisdictional power, you know, you name it, something that a state or a non-native business or non-native people want, oftentimes courts will bend the rules, you know, and say, well, you know, that is what the treaty says, but, you know, so long ago and it hasn't been followed for so long, so it would be ridiculous to uphold it now. And so Gorsuch is not the only, but one of the justices that is pretty adamant that that's not how the law should work. And that's not the court's role to rewrite the rules, to take things away from tribes. And so that's, you know, in this specific decision, McGirt v. Oklahoma, he authored the opinion. And, you know, that position was a great benefit to our tribes.
Mm-hmm. Did McGirt clear things up for other tribes in different parts of the country?
It mostly applied to other reservations here in Oklahoma. So Oklahoma had kind of basically been gaslighting tribes. And since it became a state, didn't recognize the reservations within its boundaries and said, you know, since statehood, these reservations haven't existed, even though, you know, that's not how the law works. And so after McGirt was decided, 8 other reservations in Oklahoma were upheld based on that decision, including the reservation of my tribe, Cherokee Nation. Taken together, all those reservations are about 19 million acres, or about half the land in Oklahoma. It is an area larger than West Virginia and 9 other U.S. states. And like I said, it represents the largest restoration of tribal land in U.S. history.
And what was it like, you know, as you were getting started with this process, poring over all of the complicated legalese involved and translating it into a story that's like digestible for the layperson?
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of iterations. I mean, one thing I'm proud about my book, if I can say this, is not sound like conceited, is that I think it's really readable. And it's deeply researched. There's a ton of information in there. But I think you don't have to be a lawyer or a historian or have any level of expertise. You don't even need to understand like what an amicus brief is or like what an appeals court is to like read the book and understand what's going on. And so that's something that's really important to me. I think that the law is, you know, so I think that the book is very readable. And that was something I really strove for. And it's important to me as a journalist, because I think that the law can be this dense, overwhelming thing that is hard for people to understand, but it has such a profound impact on people's lives. And I really think that the people who are impacted by laws deserve to understand them. And so how I did that was, I mean, I started with the mountain of research. So like in this case that went on for 20 years, as you can imagine, a lot of paperwork has been filed in those 2 decades. And I sat down and I read each piece of paper, court transcript, everything, and then turning that into something that is not daunting to read honestly just took a lot of tries. And so those first drafts were often pretty unwieldy. But, you know, over the years that I worked on the book, sort of just like winnowing it down, narrowing it down, a lot of things ended up on the cutting room floor. But yeah, just trying to, I think sometimes I talk about, I don't think I'm necessarily the best writer, but I think I'm a good editor. And that's how I tried to approach this process of sort of not worrying so much about the messy first draft, but then in that editing process, really getting clear about what I wanted the book to say.
So the book covers the same lawsuit that you covered in the first season of This Land, the podcast you made with Crooked. What were you able to include in the book that you weren't able to include in the audio version?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because with the book, I think you can include a lot more information and go a lot further in depth. You know, the podcast listener is, you know, like walking their dog or doing their dishes. They're kind of distracted, so you can't get too complicated before you lose people. And so with the book, I could really include a lot more research. And so, and I knew that going into it, so I kind of started from scratch. And so, you know, I conducted over 2 years of new research for the book, collected hundreds of primary source documents for the history parts. Like I said, went back and read all of those court documents, even ended up suing the attorney general and the governor of Oklahoma to get documents, interviewed over 100 people. And so, you know, for listeners who liked the story and the arc of the first season of This Land, I think the book still has that, but there's a lot of new information, new people, new stories, whole new storylines. And so I think there's still a lot there that's different.
Let's talk about your research process, because it sounds arduous. But you also are not a lawyer. You did this as like a journalist and you figured it all out yourself. Like, how did you get started doing it? Like, what would a typical day be like for you when you were gathering primary sources?
Yeah, I mean, it really just depends on the source. And so, I mean, that's one thing I love about being a journalist is that it is always different. You know, every day is different. And I'm also just like one of those people that's very curious. Like, you know, when somebody kind of teases you with information, they're like, oh, I can't tell you. That kills me because I need to know everything. I'm very nosy. And so, like, I'm like a dog with a bone. But like, for one example, like one of the women I write about in the book is a woman named Millie Naharkey. She was a Muskogee woman who had land that was really valuable because it had oil on it. And right before she turned 18, she was kidnapped by some oil prospectors in Oklahoma, assaulted and sort of swindled into signing away her land. And that sounds really extreme, but it was actually a common practice in Oklahoma in the early 1900s. These oil businessmen would actually keep little books of miners that had valuable oil estates and when they were turning 18 so that they could kidnap them and try to take their land. And so in researching that, you know, we started with like press documents and pulled all the old newspaper clippings. And then from that, found out that her estate had been involved in just a ton of litigation. And to pull the old court files in Tulsa County, I needed the case name and the case number. And so I went to the Tulsa County Courthouse, and they have these really big bound ledger books that's literally like a paper ledger of every lawsuit that's been filed in Tulsa County since statehood. And so I went through the ends of every year and wrote down all the lawsuits that involved the last name Naharkey, and found around 140.
Oh,
and then
God.
Asked Tulsa County to pull those records. Some of them were on microfilm, some of them were in a warehouse. So I like went to the warehouse and took photographs of paper copies. I got emails. Some of the records were shipped to me. And then I just sat down and read all of them. The other file I got to tell Melina Harkey's story was her BIA file. So the federal government, she was under federal and state supervision, which was also very common for Native people at the time, especially if they had valuable land. And so I pulled her BIA file, and then I also pulled what's called a probate file. So one of the things that happened to this woman was that she was assigned a legal guardian. She was declared legally incompetent and assigned a white guardian, and the white guardian actually controlled her land. And those records are public. They're probate records. So I pulled, you know, hundreds of pages of her probate records. And it was, I mean, it was just heartbreaking to go through, because it was every time, you know, she wanted money for something, she had to ask her guardian. And then a Tulsa County judge had to prove the expense. So for things like dentures, to get her car towed, to buy Christmas presents, she had to go through this arduous process. And so that's sort of one leg of the story of the book. But it's really just my process is sort of, you know, where are the documents? What are the documents? You know, I also pulled some land records, which were also housed at Tulsa County, of the land that was allotted. I pulled her enrollment jacket, her land. Well, her family didn't have enrollment jackets, but the land jackets for her family. I'm like, now I'm really geeking out. But basically, you know, as a journalist, I think about, okay, where are the documents? Where do they live? What are they? And then I just try to get all of them. And it's, as a journalist, every system, every document system is a little different, whether you're getting transcripts or court filings. But once you learn that system, whether it's PACER or OSCN or, you know, the way that Tulsa County keeps its land records, once you learn that system, then you can get the documents that you need. So
I bet you were considered a frequent flyer at the courthouse. I bet they really got to know you for how much time you spent there.
Very good friends. I mean, I sent them an information request that was a list of like over 100 cases, and they were like, okay, you know, we'll pull what we can find, which was extremely generous instead of saying like, this is crazy. And so, yeah, I became very good friends with Chris Style and Terry Rogers, the records keepers at Tulsa County that spent a lot of time helping me.
I love that. I hope that they are going to buy or receive copies of your book, because what a fun friendship backstory. Now that the book is out in the world, what is next for you?
That's a big question. I'm working on an essay series in collaboration with some other Native scholars and journalists that'll hopefully be out in the next couple years that I'm really excited about. And honestly, just, you know, enjoying the wild ride of publication, you know, just trying to get more people excited about the book and to learn about the book and enjoying sort of seeing all the different ways it's showing up in the world.
Mm-hmm. And final question, Rebecca, does this make you want to go to law school or avoid it like the plague?
I've never really thought about becoming a lawyer, but like I said, you know, I think folks who don't have a law degree should still have access to all of this information. And so, you know, before I was a journalist, I did community organizing for a number of years. And that was a big part of what we did as community organizers, is take these policies like the mayor's budget and the way she's trying to hide the fact that she's slashing money for after school programs and breaking that down for people so people understood, you know, just what the heck was going on. And I think it's a really important function of our democracy, not to get too much on a soapbox. And so I think we need more people who are not lawyers interested and invested in the law. So hopefully this book helps serve that purpose.
Rebecca, thank you so much. Rebecca Nichols' book, By the Fire We Carry, The Generations Long Fight for Justice on Native Land, is now available from your favorite independent bookseller. Thank you so much for joining me today, Rebecca.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. but as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends. Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.
And we're back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for women who are happy, healthy, confident, and free.
Also a tampon commercial.
Also anything, something that goes in your vagina that probably contains harmful chemicals, right? Like a—
That's true.
Like a deodorizing something where it's like, oh, no, you don't need a— Yeah, like that's what it sounds like. Happy, healthy, confident, and free. Yeah, anyway, before we get into Sani Petty, some announcements for the class. If you haven't checked out Empire City, the untold origin story of the NYPD yet, now is the perfect time to dive in. It's so good.
So good.
You may have seen the headlines about police misconduct and corruption within the NYPD, stories that have reignited concerns about systemic racial bias and accountability. But what if I told you that the New York Police Department is operating exactly as it always was designed to?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, from Wondery, Crooked Media, and Push Black, Empire City uncovers the history that shaped one of the biggest and most scrutinized police forces in the world. Turns out, it was always bad. Follow Empire City wherever you get your podcasts. Binge all episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
As we gear up for another pivotal presidential election, the stakes couldn't be higher for so many issues, including women's rights and reproductive health. Every vote matters now more than ever. By checking your voter registration and urging your friends and family to do the same, you can play a crucial role in making a difference. With Vote Save America, it's never been easier to check your registration status, request a mail-in ballot, and find out your state's voting deadlines all in just a few clicks. You might be thinking, I voted in 2020, I'm good to go. But so much can change in 4 years. Have you moved, changed your name, or maybe you're voting for the first time at 18? No matter what, it's important to make sure your registration is up to date so you can make your voice heard in this election. Erin, I checked mine.
Ooh, I got to check mine. I'm going to check mine right after I'm done recording.
Get started today at votesaveamerica.com/vote. This message is brought to you by Vote Save America. Learn more at votesaveamerica.com. This ad has not been authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Okay, let's get to Sani Petty. Alyssa, do you want to go first?
Sure. I'm petty. Erin, I'm mad. Mark Robinson. Okay. We talked about him in today's episode. He has done some really crazy shit. Wild shit. Said wild shit before he was the black Nazi on the porn website.
He's what been, a sentence. What a sentence.
One, I hope we never have to speak again because he will get voted out. But here's the thing, Erin. I am like so sick of the staff. Like, there was this whole thing clearly leaked by his staff that was like, in response to this incident, his campaign manager, his deputy campaign manager left, all these people quit. this is what it took. Everything else was fine, but this was the bridge too far. And it's the same way I feel every time I see a Trump person getting a contract on cable news, a Trump person who left near the end. Actually, if you left any time after the Muslim ban, I'm like, what are you telling us? Don't try to act like the insurrection was your point of no return. Or actually, let me take it back. If the insurrection was your point of no return and nothing else he had done, being impeached, all the things, that wasn't enough. Get off TV. Like, I have no interest in being a part of anybody's redemption tour when essentially mm-hmm. what happened is the Mark Robinson staffers and the Trump people realized they weren't going to get reelected and wanted to be hireable. And it's like working. And I hate it. And it makes me really upset.
Yeah. Here's the thing. If you are so late for an airplane that the boarding gate is like just about to mm-hmm. close and it's a Southwest flight, you can still get on the plane, but you're getting the worst seat.
Absolutely.
You're getting the worst
middle seat, back, you know, by the bathroom.
Yes, exactly. So, like, that's how I feel about people who are, like, leaving these – it's like, okay, you can still get on the plane, but, like, you are not – you're getting the worst seat.
Middle back bathroom.
Right. You're on the plane, though. You're on the plane.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm okay with that. Yeah. Just don't come on television like you're some hero. No.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely
What about
not.
You?
Okay, so this is one of those stories that makes me feel a little bit like old, but, and people, one thing about being in your 20s is you never listen to people that are old and like trying to help you. Like, hey, when I was in my 20s, I wish I would have done this. They're like, shut up. And then they make the exact same mistake. And then mm-hmm. they repeat the cycle. They turn 35 and they're like, when I was in my 20s, I wish I would have. Okay, Chappell Roan, love her music. Absolutely mm-hmm. adore her. I think that she is such a good pop star, and I'm glad that kids have someone like her to listen to. Like, mm-hmm. they have actual good music. They have actual good pop music from an actual interesting performer who's sort of like a David Bowie meets Kate Bush, and I love
Kate Bush, that's good.
I love it.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So I love her. She has been saying things. She's over her skis in her comments about politics in a way that really reveals how we all can be a little bit oblivious to the privilege that our identity grants us. Mm-hmm. So Chappell Roan is a cisgendered woman who performs in like drag levels of, mm-hmm. of makeup, right? And so is very, like, what she does is very, overlaps a lot with like LGBTQ entertainment. Like, a lot of her songs are like about her being gay, and a lot of her art is about like being someone who challenges gender identity and all that. However, she's still like a cis white woman,
yeah,
right? And she made some comments that she didn't feel pressured to tell people how she was going to vote in this election.
I did see this,
and then she went on TikTok to clarify the statements by saying, I've encouraged people to use critical thinking skills to learn about what they're voting for, learn about who they're voting for, and ask questions. And it's being completely taken out of context per usual. Basically, her original comments implied that everybody, like both parties are bad and neither party is perfect.
I did see that too.
Girl, you could not be more 26 years old right now. You know, you haven't experienced your Saturn return. frontal lobe isn't finished developing. That's fine. That's great for art. That's great for expression. But it's not like, I just am like, this is something that, this betrays the fact that you are a member of a privileged class that will not be among the first to be hurt if Trump won.
Right.
And a lot of her fans are in groups that would be among the first to be hurt if Trump were to win. And so if she didn't want to weigh in on politics, she could have just said nothing. And that's what I would encourage, rather than saying they're both bad, mm-hmm. Because that is such a ridiculous thing. It's a ridiculous thing on its face to say. And then trying to say like, I was telling people to think critically, blah, 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 blah. It's just take a step back. You don't have to talk about politics if you don't want to. But this kind of like wishy-washy, they're both bad stuff is how we got Ralph Nader taking mm-hmm. more votes in the state of Florida in the year 2000
yep.
than the margin of victory when they stopped counting ballots.
Yep.
Like 537 ballots. 537 ballots and more than that. So, like, please, like, be a little bit more responsible with your platform. I was disappointed. I don't love her any less, but I was disappointed with that.
No, but, you know, if you're going to use your platform, like you said, she didn't have to say anything. You know, she didn't have to opine on politics. She could have just made an affirmative statement. She didn't. And I think if you tell me I'm wrong, part of what she said the first time was so confusing. The part of the backlash was that people really thought she was going to, like, vote for Trump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she said she had so many issues with our government in every way because there are so many things I would want to change about the current state of government. And so she didn't feel pressure to endorse someone. There's problems on both sides. She used the phrase both sides.
Both sides.
Yeah. It's like, my house, to go back to a fire analogy, it's like, well, my house is on fire, but it's really hot outside. Or like, ugh, my house is... So which one am I going to do? There's problems in being outside and problems in being inside. Like, they're not comparable. I'm sorry, girl. Like, she could have even just said, like, well, who do you think I'm voting for? Look at me.
Right. That would have been better.
Yes, that would have been better. So, yeah. Also, I do think that, like, it's silly to cancel somebody who is like 26 and just being 26, saying that I just think it was like a dumb thing to say, but we all say dumb things, especially.
We all say dumb things. Just let it go. Let it go.
Just let it go.
Let it
go. All right. That is, that's the end. That's all the time I have.
That was good.
All the time
we
you
did
have.
Good today.
That was fun. I think we got a lot of information out. Thank you all for listening. As always, we love you so much. Hysteria@crooked.com if you want to get in touch. Rebecca Nagel, thank you for writing By the Fire We Carry. You can find that at your local bookseller. And Alyssa, thank you for being my ride or die. There will be more Hysteria for you next week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Fiona Pestana is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Megan Patzel. And thank you to Julia Beach, Ewa Okolate, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week.
Every weekday, NPR's best political reporters come to you on the NPR Politics podcast to explain the big news coming out of Washington, the campaign trail, and beyond. They don't just tell you what happened. They tell you why it matters and how it might impact you. Join the NPR Politics podcast every single afternoon to understand the world through political eyes.
Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.